Welcome to today's edition of Feet to the Fire, where we're always challenging the status quo. For more cutting-edge commentary, go to feettothefire.org. That is feet, the number two, thefire.org. And now your host.
Can we just talk about this other issue of work, biblically, the biblical view of work and profit, okay? You're like, seriously, you're going to go there and study this? Got to be majorly boring. No, stay with me. Thinking caps on. This is cool. We're going to deconstruct the world and then reconstruct it with the Bible. Biblical view of work and profit. What is capitalism? Because I hate that word. They use that word, co-opt it, and kind of reduced our view, our Christian view of economics. They've reduced it to something like you pull off a shelf by calling it capitalism. Like you go to the store and there's like Lucky Charms and there's Cap'n Crunch Berry and Cheerios, right? And when you go to the store of economics, there's socialism, there's capitalism. What? No, there's the devil's way and man's way, and up here on the top shelf is God's way, right? They called it capitalism to make it have an ism and put it on the shelf that everybody else is, like it's co-equal. It is not. It's God's way, and then there's every other dumb idea, which is all the same anyway, because they're both reduced to one of two things. Theft, that's Satan's way. Socialism, call whatever you want. Progressive taxation, egalitarianism, if you want to be French from the Enlightenment period. I don't care what you call it. It's called theft versus ownership. Yes, so manly. Ownership. So let's give a better, more sophisticated name for ownership, because that really won't resonate with people. What is capitalism? Forget the ism. What is it biblically?
I mean, the best way I heard it put was like it's forced altruism.
Capitalism.
So in a way, it's
it does breed intense. It breeds charity. Yeah. Absolutely, it's the most effective way to breed charity.
Because if you don't do that, then you're not going to survive.
Right, charity is. We'll talk about that. But what? I want to go simplify. Don't even give me a big hard definition. Think founding fathers. Think Declaration of Independence. What is capitalism in a broader, simpler, and more exact sense? Don't work, you don't eat. Yes, that's capitalism applied, absolutely. And that's also from the New Testament. That's from Thessalonians. Let me make it simpler. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are the right to life,
liberty,
and pursuit of happiness. Jefferson changed the word. Did you know that? The original phrase from the scholars of the day was the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. So the biblical doctrine is the law of private property. That's what capitalism is. So when people start arguing with you about capitalism, stop the debate right there and say, okay, fine, we can talk, but can we stop using this word capitalism? Because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about private property rights. That's a divine law, private property. Like, I don't know if I ever heard it that way. Maybe you did for me, or maybe I haven't thought about it. Let's talk about private property. The founders taught that doctrine, that freedom exists when a man has the right over his own life, head to toe. Why do you think government healthcare is so bad now? What does that attack the core of? I just said, the starting point of liberty and freedom is the right to life. My physical well-being from the top, bottom of my toe, top of my head, my physical well-being is the starting point of my liberty. What's the problem with government-controlled healthcare? What's it attack the core of? A person's right to what? Life. It's their when you do government-run healthcare, now who's controlling top of your head to bottom of your toe? Government-run healthcare. The government is. You have just lost. Obamacare just removed everyone's right to life. Because now Erin doesn't run Erin's life. She's now a budget line item on a government healthcare system. You see what I'm saying? That's why that bill was so bad. And Christians were freaking out about it. Because that was at the core, that was at the base of America's founding. That's in our declaration. The right to life, that's the first one, and national health care attacks that. Okay, so let's go on. So life, starting point of liberty is the right to life, that's your personal self, and property, which is the stuff that you what? Own, stuff that belongs to you. Okay, you're like, Serge, where are you getting this, that this is biblical? Okay, where do property rights come from? The concept of privately owning something. Where does that come from? Let me lead you along. Where did God constitute the legal framework for Israel? It was on a mountain with a lot of fire and smoke. What did you get at Mount Sinai? Moses. Ten Commandments. What's the eighth commandment? Thou shalt not steal. Right? And guess what that just enshrined for the history of the world?
Ownership.
Ownership. Love it. Just got the chills. Three simple words. Thou shalt not steal. That is private. What? That's what?
It's four words.
No, you're the man. Yeah, four words. Enshrine forever private property rights, because stealing presumes that the thing stolen was previously what? Owned. You just took something that was somebody else's something, and it doesn't belong to you. You violated something. It's called the right to private property. It's enshrined. And furthermore, in case you thought that was only limited to the exterior, he went into the heart. And with the ninth or tenth, sorry, I didn't check the order, one of them is do not bear false witness, but the other one got to the heart of private property. Not only can you not steal, you cannot even what? Covet. Don't even want his something. And think about taking it without taking it. Ooh, what does socialism do? Violates two major commandments. It teaches men to what? Steal. You worked for it, but I want it, so I'm going to take it. That's stealing. And what does it engender in a person's heart? You hear it was Obama's favorite tagline. Rich got to pay their what?
Fair share.
Fair share. Tax them more. They got more. It's their fault. What is it? What's that vice called? We just said the 10th commandment, right? 9th or 10th. That's envy, greed, coveting. It teaches people to covet. It's demonic to teach people to covet. What, so a rich person, see, but we're taught that way in this course. I want to do this lesson. We are taught, I do it, we probably all do it. You see a rich person drive by and you're like, psh, rich guy. What is that? You just violated the, sorry, I keep saying 9th or 10th. For the sake of argument, can we say it's the 9th? Which one is it? Thou shalt not covet? Which one is it?
That's
the 10th. The 10th, sorry, okay, we'll call it the 10th. So, thou shalt not covet. When a rich person drives by and you say that, you just violated that command. You coveted, you're jealous, you're greedy. Now, what was unique about America? What did we not have? Classes. Why didn't we have classes, the rich and the poor? Because all men are created what? Where did they get that? The Bible. No, it's brilliant. It doesn't matter if the guy's rich, because we're all equal under the law of God. That's why America had no king. Because who is America's king? God, the law. The law, three-letter word, huge in the history of civilization. Who first got law introduced and enforced and executed over their society? What great nation?
Israel.
Israel was different than the pagans because they got law. And so all the Israelites were created what? Equal. When America was founded, we said, no more king thing, no more classes. Law. All men are created. That's why it's so despicable when you have politicians 200 years later who have turned us into a bunch of classes. You got the urban poor, the middle class. I'm not middle class. I'm an American, right? Ugh. Makes me want to shoot a gun. I'm equal. Do you see why class warfare is so demonic? You're teaching people to devour each other over their money. So unbiblical. Okay. So, theft presumes ownership. The Bible teaches ownership. Where else do we see ownership in the Bible? So we saw it in the Ten Commandments at Sinai, in two of them. Where else do we see ownership in the Bible?
Corinthians.
What?
1 Corinthians?
Yeah, but let's think Old Testament first. It's all over the Old Testament. Yeah.
When they were dividing the land.
Dude, yes! How did they invade Canaan? Once they invaded Canaan, what did they do? 12 tribes, everybody got what? Their own plot. And then they broke it down by families, right? Like, it was so specific, ownership, that he told them, you can read it in the Old Testament, in the Pentateuch and all that. They cut up the land by geography. That is your plot. That belongs to the Lawlers. Nobody else gets it. And what are we promised in eternity? Our own what? Inheritance, right? Ownership's a big deal for God. Who does God own? What does God own?
Us.
He owns us. What did he create? The earth. He owns the earth. He's a possessor of the earth. Then what nation did he pull out? what nation?
Israel.
What did he say? You belong to who? Me. He keeps owning. He's all about owning. He owns the world. And then he looked at the world. He's like, I'm not crazy about all these nations. They're all wicked. I'm going to take one out and I'm going to own that one. And out of the 12 tribes, did he own a tribe?
Judah.
Yeah. Well, Judah was the king came from Judah. But what tribe did he pluck out and say, you actually don't get an inheritance of land because I'm your inheritance.
Levites.
Yes. Yes. The Levites. He owned the Levites. God's big in ownership. And then the Levites owned him. He's like, I'm your portion. Okay. You don't get land. Then, so cool, I won't read it. There's no time, but we should read it. Please go write this down and read this on your own. Leviticus 25. Let me just read one little thing because it's so good. Leviticus, I don't even know where it is. No, I'm just kidding. It's terrible. It's hard to find, though. You guys with me?
Do you want us to open it?
No, I'm just saying, are you with me generally? No, you don't have to open that. I'll just read it to you. Leviticus 25. Okay, so to show you God's passion for ownership, every seven sevens, what's seven times seven? Yeah, I was watching the clock. You all right, buddy? I don't want you to get... Okay, cool. 7-7 is 49. So every 49 years, they would declare the 50th year was the year of what?
Jubilee.
And what happened in the year of Jubilee?
All debts were canceled.
All debts were canceled. Oh, man, just got the chills. Who's that sound like?
Christ.
Who is our Jubilee? Yeah, if I keep talking about it, I'm like, tear up. Our Jubilee is Christ, right? What happens on our year of Jubilee? All debt is what? Canceled. So cool. And what they did in Israel on the year of Jubilee, on the 50th year, all property went back to the original clan. So if the Lawlers sold to the Kurzanowskis, and then there was a debting war or whatever, and then the Larkins became indentured servants to the Purcells, and then the property got all confused, and then all of a sudden the Micheletis were owning it. Year 50, what happened? Back to the Lawlers. Everybody goes back. Your slave is no longer your slave. He's now your brother again. Right? Why? Because ownership didn't matter or it mattered? It mattered that they owned their own property. And to nail the point home for those social justice Christians who tell you that socialism is the biblical way, which is a crock, it says this. Well, it was one of the verses in that whole passage. Verse 10. Yeah, consecrated, it shall be a jubilee. Verse 13. There it is. Verse 13, chapter 25. In this year of Jubilee, everyone is to return to his own property. Presumes it is good and right. It is righteous to own because that's what God wanted on the 50th year. So read that whole chapter. It's really cool. So law of private property is something I want you to learn. I also want you to learn that ownership is good. Okay? Now, if private property rights are God's ordained order, right? So we just established it with the Mosaic law and with the testimony of Israel. Ownership, private property rights are God's order. Then can you please, someone describe to me how an economy works? You're like, are we really going here? Yes, I want you to think biblically. How does an economy work? Or let me rephrase the question. Because you hear everybody debate the economy and economic issues. And what, you got to think biblically when you vote. What does work mean for a civilization? I want you to start with work. How does an economy function? Start very basic. I don't even think in America. I'm just saying, how does an economy work?
Supply and demand.
Well, let's just go simpler. Start with work. A guy owns a land, right? Takes his axe, chops down a tree. What does he have now?
Wood.
He's got wood. Whose wood is it?
His.
Yeah, somebody else come take it? Is that allowed?
No.
What's he? Now he's got three trees. He doesn't need all that wood. What's he do with the wood?
Sells
it or trades it. Now, there's a free exchange of resources. Work yields production. You have resources. Now he's got so much wood, he doesn't just trade it anymore. I'll give you wood, you give me a rat. I don't know why you want a rat, but just kill the thing. So you trade, you got too many rats. Now you start selling them. You don't trade them anymore. Now you're getting money, and money's called profit. Ooh, and don't they teach you all through school and on social media, right? Profit's evil, right? Evil. Capitalists want profit. What? What? You had a lot of rats. You sold them. They were yours. You got profit. Profit's good because now you can feed your three little rugrats. And if you have enough profit, you can give some to who? The poor, the church, the guy down the street. Ooh, profit helps everybody. Profit's great. So you have resources, profit, and now you just bought more property. I think I'll build a little woodshed over there because I got another acre. That's fine. You're subduing the earth. Now, when you have freely exchanged resources by buying and selling, not stealing, right? You're like, this is it this simple? Yes, it's this simple. It's called buying and selling, not stealing. So what do you call the free buying and selling of things in a market? The free market. Round of applause, please. Come on. Isn't that good? I don't mean clap for me. Sorry. I do that with my kids all the time. I mean clap for the idea, right? That's what you hear that word, free market. It's called resources being bought and sold. And then as the free market grows and gets an engine, it becomes 2017 U.S. economy, greatest economy in world history. But other than, say, Israel, it was what Israel had too, buying and selling the free exchange of resources. So I told you the law of private property. I told you ownership is good, right? Third thing I might remember is a free market is biblical economics. We are pro-free market because the Israelites bought and sold. Then where does the charity come from? What do you do with the poor? Any takers on that? Sule.
Then they were told that when they gleaned their fields, they weren't supposed to be so hyperactive, fine-tuned, so they can... It's like if someone was poor, they would work by at least walking to the field and grabbing their food. Like that's what Booth did.
Right. Absolutely. So who owns the field still? The owner of the field, right? But because the owner has extra and leaves the gleanings... I didn't even have that in my notes. It's a great example. The poor comes through and can get the gleanings, but essentially what's happening is that the possessor of the profit and the property can now be charitable. Okay, so now I do want you to turn to the most abused passage of Scripture by the social justice Christians all over social media, and they use it to say that we should be communists and we should be socialists in Acts chapter 4. And I want to equip you to disarm that because it's a raging debate. Go to Acts chapter 4. Anybody ever see anybody go to this section and like confuse you on it? If they're really chic and hip, they'll be like, do you know the early Christians were communists? And I'm like, excuse me while I adjust my neck and then get into a debate with you. Yeah, guys, forgive me. I didn't mean clap for me before. I meant clap over free market. You know, I would never say, please. The free market's cool. I'm nerdy. I told you that. Nerd alert. All right, Acts chapter 4. They're like, see, the early Christians were communists. No, they weren't. Read the text correctly. Not you, but them. Verse 32. Here's where they go. To 37. All the believers... Acts chapter 4, verse 32. All the believers were one in what? Heart and soul, heart and mind. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own. See, communism! Hold on a second. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own, but they had shared everything they had. See, communism, wait a second, with great power, obviously we as Christians should not claim ownership because ultimately whose ownership is it?
God's.
And we should be willing to give the own shirt off our back to any fellow Christian. So yeah, you own it, but you should live as though it's not yours. And that's from 1 Corinthians also. I can take it tons of verses that say, live as though your property is not yours. They're not getting at, that's not the point, is they're saying socialism is the way and ownership is abolished, because I'm going to disprove that in two verses. Stay with me. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and much grace was upon them all. There were no needy persons among them, for from time to time those who what? Those who were what? Owners. Those who owned lands or houses, sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone as he had need. If you are selling something, what does that presume before you sold it? You owned it. It was yours. It was yours to keep, and it was yours to sell. So guess what the early church was not? They were not communists, and they were not socialists. They were good, charitable capitalists. They owned things, they saw a need, and they volitionally sold what belonged to them, took the profit, and gave it to people in need. Do you see now? Do you see now? They mess with this text, and it drives me nuts. I want to equip you. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, let's continue going. Well, that's fine, but capitalism is bad. You can't keep saying that because that's like greedy. That's like greedy property ownership. That's like for rich people. Let's see if there's ever an example of charitable rich people. Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement, sold a field he owned and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. Now, I'm making an assumption about Joseph, but it's either him or another guy that's referenced elsewhere in Acts that I'm not going to look for now for time's sake, but it said that he owned a number of lands. Like, he had a lot. So a guy with a lot of lands, does that make him all of a sudden guilty or capitalism is necessarily greedy? No, it just means he's got a lot of stuff and more to share, more to give. So, I had a question. Well, I'll leave that question. I had a thought on that. But, okay, so I want you to see that it presumes ownership. So this is the go-to passage from millennials and social justice Christians. Like I said, here's what you'll hear. Acts 4, the rich are evil. Capitalism is evil. Abolish private property. They might not say that because it's a little too sophisticated for their lame-brained arguments, but that's what they're getting at. Institute socialism. The Bible teaches communism, and that is all flagrantly wrong. What is presumed in the passage? We said ownership. What about the wealthy are the evil? Well, let's look if the wealthy are necessarily evil. Can I keep reading into chapter 5? No one ever really takes it here, because this is like the death scene with Ananias and Sapphira. Nobody wants to talk about that. But let's talk about Peter's view of Ananias' property before Ananias dropped dead. Why did Ananias drop dead? Because he was greedy? He was greedy. Because he was greedy, though, or because he was a liar? He was a liar. That's why he died. Look. Now, a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself, but brought the rest and put it at the apostles' feet. And then Peter said to him, Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you receive for the land? Wait, what was the problem with Ananias? He kept it. Well, he could have kept it, because Peter's about to say that. What did Ananias do to the Holy Spirit? He lied about what he got. Didn't. Look at verse 4. I love it. Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? You didn't have to sell it. It was yours, private property. And after it was sold, wasn't the money what? What's your translation say? At your disposal. Wasn't the money yours? No one's rebuking wealth or ownership. He's actually affirming it. He's saying it was your land, Ananias. You didn't have to sell it. And when you sold it, the profit wasn't bad. It was at your disposal to do what you wanted with it. Great. You got money from selling your land. What made you think of doing such a thing? Well, what did he do? What did he do? Was greedy? No. Well, yes, but that wasn't the issue. You have not lied to men, but to God. The issue was that his greed was manifest. Yes, it was a problem that he was greedy, but his greed was manifest in lying. He lied. My point is, owning things and making money is not why Ananias dropped dead. Because look at the next verse. When Ananias heard this, he fell down and died. And great fear seized all who heard what happened. He died because he was a liar. He was never rebuked, is my point, for having something and selling it and making money off of it. So when they go there, guys, please shut that down. Who were some rich people that did well in the Bible and served well? Where did Christ get buried? Right, you know what? Who owned it? Yeah, thank you. Sorry, you just. Yeah.
Anyway.
No, that was to have a tomb like that was a point of ownership and wealth. That was beneficial that Joseph of Arimathea had that tomb. God used his wealth to put the body of our Messiah there. Somebody else's hand went up, Miles.
Zacchaeus, and also Lydia had purple cloth.
Seller of purple cloth, yeah. Think Old Testament. Solomon had a lot of wealth. Solomon built the temple, but a collection was made before the temple was built. Who ran the collection?
David.
And what did David do? David didn't just tithe. David advertised his amount he was tithing to all of Israel. He said, I'm giving this much. Boom. And he showed all of his gold. And God built the temple with that. Is that good? Yeah, man. So guys, break down the argument. Wealth isn't bad. Stop believing the hype. It's awesome. God gave wealth to bless humanity because he knew that the fall was terrible. There'd be poor people. We need to take care of them. And the free market exchange of private property elevates the status for everybody's life to hell.
Wait, you said he like showed everybody what he was giving?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be like against the whole meekness thing?
Well, it depends. You just got to, compare Bible with Bible. And Brandy preached on it when we were doing a fundraiser for our church, the fund drive, to get the new property. It depends on your heart. Yeah, he was like being pastoral to Israel and saying, look what I'm doing. do like me. And then Israel gave so much generously that they had more than enough for the temple. But yeah, good question. In the New Testament, yeah, you don't broadcast what you're giving. Yeah, not a health and wealth prosperity gospel thing. Okay, cool, good. Any questions on it? There you go. There's biblical economics, yeah?
I think everything makes sense in the context of biblical economics. I think it usually falls apart for me when I'm talking to someone who isn't a Christian, because when you take God out of that, there's no reason for someone not to be selfish in capitalism. You know, like, and so that's usually the crux of the argument, is like, because of the way the world is now, minus, you know, not wanting to do that because it's against God's will would be. What's, you know, a lot of individuals would see no incentive in taking tax breaks and doing X, Y, and Z.
Right, and we can talk more about that, but just to answer it super fast in two parts as well as I can, but that's a great point. One is, even in a non-theocratic system where we're not actually theocracy would be religion run. We're not like a Muslim nation, we're not religion run. But even in what we call like a secular system, although we're Christians, I don't call it a secular system, but you get my point. People are still moved to charity, even unbelievers. So our wealth, we are still the wealthiest and the most charitable nation in history and currently, statistically, we still are. Men are moved to give with exorbitant amounts of wealth in a free system, not when their stuff's getting robbed, but in a free system they are. And the other thing I would say is and that's a big argument to bring up. Well, you know, capitalism fell apart now. No. You can't just say that because man is sinful that you then subvert or remove one of God's other commandments. Okay, man's greedy. So then you abolish the eighth commandment? You see what I'm saying? Like, they can't do that. They're playing a game with you. Well, nobody believes in God anymore and all capitalists are greedy. Time out. Then reform that. But don't say, well, since that's the situation now, we'll start stealing everybody's property, toss the eighth commandment. Nuh-uh. The eighth commandment says, and I know you're going to say, well, they don't believe in the eighth commandment. And that's where you got to say, look, if we're going to have a discussion, we have to talk about an absolute morality. You don't want to talk about God or Moses or the Bible? Fine. But everybody still functions on the principle that you can't steal. Every civilization, stealing's wrong. And now you're in the issue of whether or not they hold the moral absolutes. And of course they don't, but that's why they're sleeping with their neighbor's wife, that's why they're cool with gay marriage, and that's why they're fine with excessive taxation and stealing everybody's money. See, people think that Christians should be advocating only for the right of the unborn and only for the sanctity of marriage, but economics, that's a secular issue. Did I just prove to you tonight? I hope, not in an arrogant way. Did I just make a biblical case for you tonight that economics is a biblical spiritual issue? Yeah, if we're going to advocate for the life of the unborn, good. If we're going to advocate for the sanctity of marriage, good. We also need to advocate for the sacred nature of property. That's also sacred in God's kingdom. He gave us 10 commandments, not less than 10. So we should be advocating as Christians for all those issues. Good question. Cool. I don't want to do this next week, so we just got to finish these last points. Do you need a break, or should we just do it? We're just going to do it, because if I give you a break, we're never going to get back. We're not going to finish. And I would love to do this lesson again, but I can't write another email and say we're still on lesson 4. So let's just, you guys, here, let me give you a little sentence. Here's a brain break. If you got to stand, you can. Okay, so, here's what I want you to remember. Law of private property, right? Ownership is good. A free market is biblical economics. And wealth isn't evil. The rich aren't evil. I admire my rich friends. I'm glad they worked hard. Okay, men, here's a conclusion sentence on work. Men, provided your intentions are right and your heart is pure, then pursuing a career, listen closely. Men, I'm encouraging you to make some money. Listen, men, provided your intentions are right and your heart is pure, pursuing a career with the goal of making money, amassing wealth, and using it charitably for God's kingdom and glory, I'd say is a great and biblical aspiration indeed. That's good. Do it. So go get a career. Make some cash. Okay, let's close that. Let's go to the second thing, the call to non-dependency. I was on the guys. Girls, can we talk a little bit?